Season 2, Episode 1 of Midwest Sports Talk with Jake Book and Brian Lambert. Brian will not be joining me today. Several months ago, we decided to do Season 2. And not for lack of trying, we recorded the same episode I don't know how many times. But Anchor gave us some issues, and we were unsuccessful with getting that episode recorded and uploaded. So here we are. It is just me for this episode, and you know, I'm just outside enjoying the beautiful 70 degree day here in the Midwest. So if you hear some dogs barking in the background, birds chirping, neighbors mowing the grass, you know, something like that, I am not gonna be locked in the office today. You know, we're gonna be outside enjoying the weather. But, you know, I'm hanging out on the back deck, and I'm just thinking it is a wonderful time of the year. You know, a lot of people talk about October being a great month for sports. A lot of people talk about March being fantastic, you know, with March Madness. This is a great time of year. You have the NHL playoffs. You have the NBA playoff run. We're about a month into the season. Not quite a month into the season for baseball. So us being huge fantasy baseball players, the DFS slate is awesome. It's so fun to get into it. Right now is a great time for fab because you get past the initial fab runs where people are spending way too much money on people. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading and listening to podcasts from other people in the industry. I really enjoyed Lucas Bieri's fab articles that he writes. And, you know, I'm going to refer to those a lot, especially in this episode. But it's just, it's a great time for sports. And, you know, today is an off day for the Cubs. My Grizzlies do play tonight. But I do want to talk a lot about Midwest sports because that's what this is about. You know, our podcast, for those of you who did not join us in the first season, our podcast is about the national scope of sports. We talk about sports from a Midwest mindset. The national media tends to focus on things from, you know, a New York state of mind, an LA state of mind. They don't look at things from a Midwest state of mind. So oftentimes our teams like the Cubs and the Cardinals, the Grizzlies, the Indiana Pacers, you know, random teams from the Midwest don't get a lot of love, and we like to make sure that they do get the love that they deserve. We're going to talk about the Pirates today. The Pirates are off to a hot start, and they are in sole possession of first place in the NL Central, so I'm definitely going to give them some love. Mainly, I'm just excited to be able to be talking sports again, so thank you guys so much for listening. And I can't wait to get started. All right, so the first thing I want to jump into is NBA. I don't have a ton to talk about. I kind of want to just go over where we're at as far as the series are for the playoffs. I'll go a little more in depth probably on the Memphis series since that is my favorite team. And obviously, you know, they're a Midwest team. So Philadelphia has already taken care of the Nets. It's kind of what everyone thought. You know, Brooklyn had, you know, KD and Kyrie and traded both of them off. And they already had such a good start that they kind of hung around a little bit and ended up hanging on to a playoff spot, and Philadelphia swept them just like everyone thought they would. Then we have the Miami Heat. They're up 2-1 on the Bucks. Giannis is actually back tonight for Game 4. His back was bothering him in Game 1. He's missed a couple games. Tyler Hero broke his hand. So a lot of injuries in Round 1, kind of all over the place, but especially in this series, I expect the Bucks to come back and win that series. Boston The Celtics are up 3-1 over Atlanta. I don't expect anything crazy there. I think Boston takes care of business. The Knicks are up over the Cavaliers 3-1 in the last of the East series. So I think the Knicks, you got to think they're going to win one of them. I don't think they're going to blow it. It would be such a New York Knicks thing. And it would be hilarious because Knicks fans were, they pretty much shut down the streets in New York whenever they went up 3-1 and were chanting Knicks in five. And I thought it was hilarious, but I think the Knicks will finish off Cleveland. Mitchell kind of was on a milk carton and just missing in game four. He needs to be more present, and I mean, not only does he need to be more present, he needs to be the best player on the court. And Jalen Brunson has just outplayed him, just flat out outplayed him. So that's my predictions in the East. As far as the West goes, this series, Denver and Minnesota, pretty much over. It's 3-1 Denver. Minnesota won last night in game four to extend the series. It took everything out of Anthony Edwards. And I think Joker had a better individual performance anyway, but Anthony Edwards had a pretty good game, and you know, Minnesota extended it to see a game five, kept their playoff hopes alive, but I think Denver is going to end it in five games. The Clippers, I don't know how they didn't get swept, but they're down 3-1. They are without Kawhi Leonard. They are without Paul George. Russell Westbrook is doing everything he can. They're outmanned. You know, Phoenix has a superstar squad, and Russell Westbrook's doing everything by himself. But they're probably going to be out in five games as well. So I think Phoenix moves on there, and they will play Denver. Sacramento and the Golden State Warriors. Sacramento did what they were supposed to do. They won their first two games at home. Golden State won the last two games at home. They held on by 1 point last night. Now there's news about De'Aaron Fox breaking his finger, and he's doubtful for game five. Golden State gets lucky again with an injury, just like they did last year when John Morant got injured in their competitive series against Memphis. Which brings us to the last series to discuss, and that is the Los Angeles Lakers are leading 2-1 over my Memphis Grizzlies. That game Saturday night in game three, it was obviously they split in Memphis. Ja Morant was hurt in game two. Memphis kind of, you know, rallied behind Tyus Jones. There was a huge, huge performance from Jaren Jackson Jr. Memphis just played well. And to be honest, teams do not play as aggressively on defense when Ja Morant is not in the game. So I think Memphis benefits from that. And it will give the false assumption that Memphis plays better without Ja Morant. And I think that that is just crazy talk. So in game three, Memphis comes out flat. Dylan Brooks is shooting a lot. And I think he's doing that because the media obviously followed up on his talks about LeBron being old and how he doesn't respect anyone until they give him 40. And, you know, he's trying to get in LeBron's head and make LeBron do too much. I understand why he's doing that, and I get it. I like him doing that, because if he gets in LeBron's head, which is really hard to do, LeBron is a really good basketball player. LeBron is, more than anything, a really smart basketball player. He's a 38-year-old that is putting up ridiculous stats, not just because he's gifted physically. He's super smart. He knows when to expend energy and when not to. He knows when it's his time to take the shot. He knows when to get rid of the ball. And, you know, he's just a really intelligent ball player. And Dylan Brooks is trying to get in his head. If it works, great. If it doesn't, who cares? At least he tried. What he did, more so than anything else, is he took the national attention off of, is Ja Morant going to play in game three? And he put the attention on himself. What was not good was the attention on himself got him ejected at halftime. Like right after halftime. 12 seconds after halftime. The ejection, I don't believe, should have been a flagrant two. I think what happened was Dylan Brooks reached across and tried to poke the ball out, assuming that LeBron James was going to finish the crossover. LeBron went behind the back instead. When that happened, there was what appeared to me to be incidental contact. But there was contact nonetheless. So I do think it should have been a flagrant foul. It should have been a flagrant one, in my opinion. A lot of people who are not Memphis fans and very smart basketball minds, in my opinion, have said the same thing. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter say it. My buddy Mike Barnett agreed with that as well. He is not a Memphis fan by any means, and he loves to poke the bear whenever Memphis is not doing well and kind of make fun of me. So him agreeing and thinking that that was a flagrant one made me kind of assured a little bit that I wasn't being a homer in that fact. So it sucks that he did get ejected, because the last 2 minutes of that first half, there was a 10-0 run by Memphis. It cut it from 26 to 16, the deficit. And there was some momentum going Memphis's way. That momentum was immediately taken from Memphis when that ejection happened. Now, there were several other times when that momentum came back. There were just so many Memphis runs, and the Lakers seemed to have a little bit of an answer to all those runs. It seems like it would get down to 10, 12. Next thing you know, it would balloon up to 16, 18, 20. Overall, I don't think the Lakers had an answer for Ja. He had a monster game, 45 points, 13 assists, 9 rebounds. I hope those numbers are right, because I have no information in front of me. I'm just going off the top of my head here. I believe he was responsible when you take all the assists into consideration, and if they were 2 or 3 pointers off of him, he was responsible for 77 points off of his points and his assists, which is the 5th most points accounted for between points scored and assisted on in the playoffs ever in the history of the NBA. 5th most all time. That's wild. Great performance from Ja Morant. He scored on 22 straight points in the fourth quarter. He has no quit in him. I hope that that mentality is something that's contagious, and Memphis uses that, and that locker room takes that, and that is what they use moving forward in game four. I think that Memphis can and will tie it up, and it will go back to Memphis 2-2. That being said, the Memphis Grizzlies are 0-15 when they are an underdog on the road. And they are a 5-point underdog on the road in Los Angeles tonight. Take that information and do with it what you will. Midwest Sports Talk is now a part of Dr. Roto. Visit drroto.com for all of your DFS, season-long fantasy, and sports betting needs. So we're going to do a shortened podcast today. Basically, we just talked about the NBA. I'm going to go over the MLB as well. I'm not going to go into NHL as much because, admittedly, I don't know much about hockey. And no one wants to hear me talk about the NHL when I have no idea what I'm talking about. So Wanted to get into the MLB a little bit. What I'm going to do is I want to talk about just a couple of things that I think are mirages and a couple of things that I think are the real deal. You know, we're three, almost 4 weeks in to the MLB now, and there are some things that I can point out that I definitely don't think are real, and there are some things that I can point out that I think could be the real deal that don't really appear to be. So before I talk about those things, I do want to mention that my Cubs have kind of surprised me. You know, they got off to a pretty decent start. We just lost 3 out of 4 to the Dodgers at home, which sucks because we just had a 5-1 West Coast road trip, and I was really excited about that. Losing 3 out of 4 at home right after that kind of sucks. That's the first series that we've lost since the opening series of the season, so that kind of sucks. I'd be a little bit more excited if that didn't just happen. Max Muncy and James Outman killed us. I felt like they hit a million home runs against us. But we got the day off today, and Justin Steele, who has just been incredible. If you don't have him in fantasy and he is not rostered or he is on someone's team that you're able to go get him, I would highly suggest doing it. That man is going to get some Cy Young votes this year. However, I am happy with what the Cubs have done. They extended Nico Horner and Ian Happ. They have Dansby Swanson right in the middle. That is their top three in the order. They also have Seiya Suzuki. That is the top four of the order, and they are all signed through 2026. And you heard it here first. Shohei Ohtani is going to be a Cub. I don't think we're going to trade for him. I don't think anybody's going to trade for him. But I think the Cubs go out and spend the money. I think we have the pieces that entice him to come to Chicago. And I'm going to be so ridiculously happy when it happens. The Cardinals, the other team that Brian would be talking about if he's here, they're going to be mentioned in the upcoming segment here. So I'm not really going to go over them. Let's see, any other Midwest teams I want to discuss? They're going to be coming up. The NL Central is being led by the Pirates and the Brewers. Everyone thought the Brewers would be good, but they're dealing with some injuries right now. You know, Brandon Woodruff, he's missing, I've heard, 4 to 12 weeks, which is a crazy timeline. You know, that's 4 weeks. It seems, you know, pretty low on the low end there. To 12 weeks is normally here 4 to 6, 6 to 8. You know, it's not as long of a timeline there, but who knows? Fantasy wise, you hope it's 4 weeks. Cubs and Cardinal fans, you hope it's 12. Corbin Burnes had a scare. He had something going on with his side. He kind of reached and grabbed his side, pulled himself out of the game as he kind of, you know, waved his arm over to the trainers, said, hey, come check this out. It was like 85 pitches into his start. So he normally is a guy who can throw 100, no problem. And I own him in a DNH, and I got a little worried. Turns out he's fine. The Brewers also have some other injuries going on, you know, in the rotation with Aaron Ashby. They also have some injured outfielders. Garrett Mitchell, I don't even know what's going on with him, but it's looking like it's a very long-term injury with him. Then I know my buddy Colton Weber has Sal Frelick and was hoping that he was going to get the call up to replace Garrett Mitchell. However, Sal Frelick is being bothered with a thumb injury, so he's not getting the call to replace Mitchell. So that's a bit frustrating. But the Brewers, although being bit by the injury bug, are still 15-7. They just keep winning, and that is frustrating as can be. The Reds are being the Reds. You know, they've got two stud pitchers in dynasty leagues with, you know, Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, and they've got some exciting guys with Ashcraft, and then there's Andrew Abbott in the minor leagues, who just got promoted today, actually, to AAA, so that's exciting stuff. He has a ridiculous K per nine. So that's another guy I would suggest going out and looking to add, but he's going to be a guy that you're going to be probably paying a high price if you're trading for him. He's probably owned everywhere if you're in a, you know, 15-teamer, pretty standard roto league like we all normally play in. Most of the people who listen to this who are on Baseball 365 and you play in those Fantrax 15-team dynasty leagues with 30 major leaguers and 20 minor leaguers, somebody owns Andrew Abbott. And those owners are going to be holding on pretty tightly after the season that he's starting to put together, because that K per nine is ridiculous. And now the promotion, everybody's been going nuts over him on Twitter today. But now we're going to get into what I would consider to be the three biggest mirages to this point. So my first mirage that I want to point out is the 16-7 Pittsburgh Pirates. It felt weird just saying it. 16-7 Pittsburgh Pirates. They were 9-7. And that felt weird. They've won 7 straight. That is the longest active winning streak in the major leagues right now. It is the longest winning streak the Pirates have had in, I don't even know how long, years. It's something for Pittsburgh to be happy about, which is great. You know, Pittsburgh hasn't been super successful in quite some time. You know, 2015, they won 98 games. But it's been a while. And, you know, I thought them getting Andrew McCutchen back was something that was going to be similar to what the Cardinals did last year, bringing back Albert Pujols with limited expectations, but something that would sell tickets, put a smile on the fans' faces. I thought it was a good PR move. Not necessarily is McCutchen going to have some like crazy resurgence or anything like that, especially with the team as young. And let's just say it how it is. We'll call a spade a spade. The Pirates were supposed to suck. They were not supposed to be good at all. You know, they've got a couple of, you know, gray-bearded veterans like Carlos Santana, Rich Hill, and then a lot of young pieces. And then O'Neill Cruz happens. He is super exciting, a ton of pop. He's a 6'7" athletic freak at shortstop, a ton of pop. He can run the bases. He looks like a gazelle going first to third. Like, he's just so exciting that he is what Pittsburgh fans look forward to. And he breaks his ankle. And what do the Pirates do? Do they fold? No. They just have Connor Joe, OBP over 400. They have Sawinski just hitting home runs like he's Albert Pujols last year. They have the most quality starts in the NL Central. I think the most quality starts in the major leagues. At least they did a couple days ago. I don't want to misquote because I haven't looked it up today. But, you know, 3 or 4 days ago, they had the most quality starts in baseball. They have Vince Velasquez pitching like we all thought he would 5 or 6 years ago. They have Rich Hill pitching like he's not 58 years old. They have Bednar leading the league in saves. Bednar is somebody who, even though he has a very favorable contract, I know a lot of people that were iffy on drafting him in DNHs where he would go because they were afraid that he would get traded. Cue the neighbor doing yard work, like I told you guys would happen in the beginning of the podcast. But Bednar, they thought he would be a Yankee closing by the end of season. You know, if there was like an injury to Clay Holmes. They thought, I'm going to move inside to finish this. So they thought that, you know, Bednar would be traded. But the Pirates are playing tough. They're in every game, it seems like. Now, granted, they did have a series against the Rockies where their lineup put up a bunch of, you can call them phantom stats. It's going to make their offense look really, really good because they played at Coors and they beat up on the Rockies, who are a very bad team. But I'm not going to lie, their pitching has looked really good. Their pitching looked really good at Coors. It's not supposed to happen. Oviedo, great pitcher. And I heard a lot of people say, don't start Oviedo at Coors. What does he do? Quality start. He shut everybody up. But I still can't get away from it. I think that that's one of the things that's a mirage. I think the 16-7 Pittsburgh Pirates just can't, it cannot be a real thing. Cannot be a real thing. Which brings me to my second biggest mirage. It's also going to be in the NL Central. The 9-13 St. Louis Cardinals. I do not believe that things can stay the way they are in the Central. The Pirates in first place, the Cardinals in fourth. It's just, it's not something that we're used to as baseball fans. I'm definitely not used to seeing it, and I don't think we're going to see it very much longer. It's unsustainable. The Cardinals have had the opposite in pitching that the Pirates had. The Pirates have had the most quality starts in baseball. The Cardinals, in their 22 games, have had 3 quality starts. They had had 2, and then Jack Flaherty pitched their 3rd quality start in their 22nd game last night, as he allowed 3 runs in 6 innings, barely getting a quality start for the St. Louis Cardinals. So you have the most and the least quality starts in baseball through their 22 and 23 games played. I think that something has got to change for the Cardinals. I don't think it's like they don't even have to make a move. I think something has to be luck-based, like their voodoo magic. Something has to happen. Miles Michaelis just got paid, and he is pitching like he doesn't even belong on a major league rotation at all. I do not understand how he is pitching so bad. I mean, Brian and I saw it where the extension did not really make sense. He is a guy that we've avoided in fantasy. Career high 156 strikeouts, I believe. I don't think he's never been a strikeout guy. He's not an ace, and he's being paid to be the Cardinals' ace moving forward. Now, granted, the Cardinals do not have Adam Wainwright. He's on a rehab assignment right now. He'll be back soon. That could help them out. I think he also has that voodoo magic that we all talk about. He has it. He's always had it. It makes me sick as a Cubs fan. I cannot stand it. But I think he could turn it around for the Cardinals, and they could go on some sort of run. Which brings me to my third and final biggest mirage, and that is the first place Arizona Diamondbacks. I absolutely love the Diamondbacks. They are fun to watch. They have a ton of young talent. I love Alec Thomas. I love Corbin Carroll. I love Geraldo Perdomo when he plays, which is about half the time. They can't seem to figure out, do we want the savvy veteran, do we want Ahmed to play short, or do we want Geraldo Perdomo, the flashy, you know, fast and powerful shortstop, you know, offensively? Well, who do we want? They don't know. They split the time right down the middle. It drives me crazy as a fantasy player. But Arizona's fun, man. And they made the move that's like really difficult to make as an organization. You've got a guy, I feel like Chris Collinsworth there. Here you got a guy, Madison Bumgarner, that he's a legend, man. A playoff legend. He's not a legend in Arizona. He's a legend in San Francisco. He's a great pitcher. Might even be a Hall of Fame pitcher when you take his postseason stats into consideration. You owe him a lot of money. But they didn't care. They want to win now. Now's the time. And they see that. They see that the Dodgers are not the Dodgers of old. The Dodgers lineup that looked scary 1-9 is no longer there. They've got some weak spots. The Dodgers rotation that used to be absolutely filthy with whiff rate, no longer top five in whiff rate. More like 20th in whiff rate. The Dodgers bullpen that used to be top five, no longer top five. The Padres, who everyone thought, holy crap, they spent so much money on this team, got off to a slow start. The Diamondbacks decided, let's DFA Madison Bumgarner. So I love what they're doing, but I'm a little scared because all they have are young arms. How many innings can you trust these young arms for, you know? Have any of these guys thrown 150, 160, 180 innings? If and when you get to the playoffs, are these arms going to be spent? We've seen it here in the St. Louis area. Like, if Brian was here, I would bring this up because I know he would know exactly what I'm talking about. When Michael Wacha and Carlos Martinez and a lot of these arms that the Cardinals had at the time got to the playoffs, they were tired because the arms had never thrown that many innings. So by the time they got to the playoffs, they were shot because they had just never, they had never been there. They'd never put that many miles on, you know? So that's why I think the Diamondbacks are not for real. I think maybe they could keep it up and potentially make it to the playoffs. I don't think they win that division because I think the Dodgers are still probably too good. I think the Padres are still probably too good. I think the Padres pitching is still pretty legit. And I think getting Tatis back gives them that shot in the arm. And I think Juan Soto figures out he's still Juan freaking Soto. So that's going to be my last of the biggest mirages. Now I'm going to run through my real deals real quick and we'll wrap up this first episode. My first real deal is going to sound a lot like the biggest mirage. I'm going to also choose the 9-13 Cardinals. I think the 9-13 Cardinals could also be a real deal because of the pitching. It was an issue in the offseason. Everybody that knew about the Cardinals knew their biggest issue was pitching. It seems that everyone could see it except the people making the decisions in the front office in St. Louis. Those issues are not going away anytime soon. Jack Flaherty is a free agent. Adam Wainwright, retirement looming after this season. So not only do you have pitching issues, you're about to have rotation spots opening up. Now, I will say Graceffo and McGreevy and Liberatore all look good. McGreevy just got a promotion up to AAA. Great. But can you really expect two full rotation spots to be filled by those guys? Like, is Zach Thompson going to be the guy? Who knows? But something has to happen. And I think it's a real possibility that that doesn't happen. Paul Goldschmidt's 35 years old. Nolan Arenado's not getting any younger. Two out of the last 3 days, Jordan Walker out of the starting lineup. Paul DeJong just came back from the injured list, which muddies up that lineup even more. Like, the Cardinals are having a very tough time with the amount of outfielders that they have on their roster. And now you've added in one more middle infielder as well. Is that going to take away at bats from Nolan Gorman, who's probably your best hitter? That sucks. If I'm a Cardinal fan, I do not want Nolan Gorman or Brendan Donovan or Tommy Edman losing at bats to Paul DeJong. I do not want Jordan Walker losing at bats to Alec Burleson. I think something needs to happen. They need to make a trade. I don't know who it needs to be. I don't know who even has the most trade value. A lot of people here are saying Tyler O'Neill. I don't know if he's even got the most trade value. Is Dylan Carlson the guy? He's only 24 years old. Is he the guy you get rid of? Is it Newt Barr? Is that? I don't even know. I know a lot of fancy guys like Newt Barr, but someone's got to go. That's my first real deal. My second one is the 14-7 Texas Rangers. I've been all over the Rangers in the offseason. They put a ton of money into pitching, and it is paying off. Jacob DeGrom is Jacob DeGrom. Eovaldi has looked good with his K per nine. Now, granted, everyone's had some pitching issues in the early going, but I like that they've added the pitching after they added the hitting the year before. With Semien, Seager, Josh Young has looked awesome. I had a couple of opportunities to add Josh Young in Dynasty format, and I did not. And I've regretted it. Adolis Garcia has been great. I've had him in a couple leagues as well in redraft, and the guy has just went bonkers. He hit 3 home runs and 2 doubles, going 5 for 5 the other day. I have him in a best ball, and I jumped up in the standings just from that one day. So Texas is a fun team, and I picked them to make the playoffs, and I am liking the start so far. So that's another one of my real deals. And my final one is the AL East as a division. I think they're the real deal. They have 5 teams in the top 8 teams in the American League. All teams have a winning record as of today. Boston is 12-11 and in 5th place. The Yankees and the Blue Jays tied for 3rd and 4th. Who would have thought that Baltimore would be above both of them and that Tampa Bay would start off as crazy hot as they have? 19-3. 22 straight games with a home run for Tampa Bay. Insane. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me on Season 2, Episode 1 of Midwest Sports Talk. I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did. Look out for Episode 2. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening to Midwest Sports Talk with Jake Book and Brian Lambert. You can find us on Twitter at MWSportsTalk618.